Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Governor Robert Bentley of Alabama says his state's immigration law is the strongest in the country. Police can question and detain people they suspect of being in the country illegally, and public schools must verify the immigration status of their students. It's fueling a big debate over civil rights, and it's making waves in the state economy from construction to farming. This hour On Point, examining Alabama's tough immigration law. We'll start today in Chandler Mountain, Alabama, where we're joined by Kathy Smith. She and her husband own a 90-acre vegetable farm. Of the 30 workers they currently rely on to pick their crops, only about seven have been showing up. Kathy Smith, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jane.
Help us understand in real terms, Kathy, how this new immigration law is affecting you.
Well, it had affected us a lot when it went into effect because a lot of our workers packed up and left, and we still had produce to get out of the fields. With no workers, you know, our produce was set there over-ripening in the fields, and then it caused us to have to go strip one of our new fields out green, which we usually do not do. We pick ours pinks and ripes. We had to strip our field out green.
So what kind of losses are you looking at, Kathy?
Well, right now it's hard to determine. We will lose money until all of this finished and figure out what we're losing because of picking our greens, and because a lot of our buyers just don't buy them that way, and then we have to find other people to take them, and it's until it's all over with, it's really hard to tell. And then some new people we've had to hire has cost us more money.
Do you have options as far as finding more labor, helping pick those crops?
Well, we had some from another mountain where they finished up their crops, had come over here and helped us last week, which helped out a lot. You know, we didn't have a lot of acres to finish up ourselves, but a lot of farmers did on this mountain and still do.
So tell me about that. How common do you think your situation is? Other farmers clearly are being affected across Alabama?
Yes, all over Alabama. All farmers all over Alabama.
And so how do you think this will affect food prices in Alabama and, more broadly speaking, across the country?
Well, a little bit later, it's going to affect it a lot. It might not. You might not can see it right now. But it will end up showing up in the grocery stores. And some farmers don't even know if they'll be able to farm next year, if they not be able to find the workers that they need. You know, you need to know before next summer whether you're going to put a crop in, because you have to order your plants in January. Well, the farmers do not know whether to order their plants to put in a crop. And if they don't have workers to pick their crop, and then there's no need ordering plants to put it in.
And so what are your margins like these days, Kathy? If you have one bad year, like it sounds like you're going to have this year, can you make it up next season?
Not always. Sometimes the next year you might have a cheap market, which would hurt. You know, you could have a year. We've had years where you have a cheap market all year, and you lose on that. You know, it's hard to overcome bad years. You know, you have a lot of farm payments, a lot of tractor payments, a lot of labor. You know, there's a lot of money tied up into it. I know a lot of people think farmers make a lot of money, but they got a lot at expense.
Kathy Smith, I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you very much for the perspective. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
Kathy Smith, joining us from Chandler Mountain, Alabama. Joining us now from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, is Michael Innes Jimenez. He's an assistant professor of American Studies at the University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa, where he studies immigration and labor. Michael Innes Jimenez, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So there's one aspect of this story. Difficult to hear Kathy Smith there from a farmer's perspective. Tell us who else is affected by this law.
We've been getting a lot of reports like Kathy's with farmers, but a lot of immigrants and Latinos in general. There's a lot of fear and confusion in the community, both by legal residents, by Mexican-American and Guatemalan American citizens, and undocumented immigrants. It's across the board. If you look Latino, there's reasons to be concerned.
Well, help us understand the specific provisions of this bill.
I'm sorry?
Help us understand the specific provisions of this bill.
There are several that are affecting the community to a large extent. One is what's been in the news a lot about the kids in primarily elementary school kids. There's a provision that requires schools to just collect data, parents and children's citizenship status. The community is very hesitant. Immigrant community is very hesitant to go in now to school. Kids are staying at home because they're worried about maybe the child's a citizen, but one of the parents might not be.
Do you have an idea how many children have stopped going to school in Alabama?
The numbers we had, the day that the last Wednesday, there was 1,100, or a week ago Wednesday was 1,100, and by a week ago today, it's 2,300. So the day that the injunction went into effect, there were 1,100 people that were out, and that grew to 2,300 on Monday.
I'm hearing and reading stories of children being removed from classrooms so their citizenship can be verified. Is that happening?
It is. We've gotten several reports of schools being removed to the cafeteria to be asked their status, which is not supposed to happen under this law. Teachers asking kids in the classroom. Again, a lot of these children are citizens, and they're being just subjected to the harassment because of the color of their skin.
Here's some sound from some undocumented students at Center Point High School in Birmingham saying that they're now afraid to come to school.
I came to school thinking, are they going to pull me out of class? Are they going to ask me questions?
They're saying we can't have the same rights as citizens because they're not citizens. But I really want to know, what's the real definition of citizen?
So beyond what's happening in the schools, I mean, I'm reading municipal water companies shutting off services to people who can't prove they're illegal. I'm reading stories of store clerks asking Hispanic shoppers for their Social Security cards. How are the citizens of Alabama reacting to this law?
Well, again, it's a fear and confusion. One of the provisions that was not blocked temporarily by the judge was one that voids all contracts between unauthorized immigrants and anybody, government or otherwise. Child support payments, if there's a contract for child support payments, those are voided. Rental loans, anything. Any contract is now void according to state law.
How many undocumented immigrants live in Alabama, Mike, and how many are illegal?
Well, obviously the numbers are hard to come by. The total Latino population in the state is only about 4%, about 140,000. They're not a large percentage. They're not a big presence in most of the state. And I think that's what's puzzling a lot of the people in the community. They're, living quietly, living under the radar. Most of them are either in service industries in urban areas or on farms.
And those that are leaving, where are they going?
We're getting reports of them moving to bordering states, Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, the Carolinas, and a few going back to Mexico, but Guatemala, and the situation obviously in Mexico and Guatemala are much worse than here, so people are sticking it out. If they have any opportunity to leave, if their ties are not that strong to the community, they're going to go. There's no reason to hang around. And the problem also is that there's a lot of mixed status families. We mentioned the children are probably citizens. There are families that have one member might have documents, one might not. Everybody's leaving. There's a lot of legal residents and citizens that are not willing to hang around.
And do you foresee more workers, legal or illegal, coming in to replace those who have been working in Alabama?
It's going to happen. I mean, you have this is a young community, but there's a lot of work to be done. It's a young immigrant community. It's only been within the last 10 years that there's been a surge of Latinos in Alabama. With the tornadoes of April 27th and April 15th, there's a lot of construction that needs to get done. There were a lot of skilled, legal, Latino construction workers that have left. So those need to be replaced. Alabamians are not are not going to want to wait for the construction. Their waiting lists are high to begin with, and they're not going to want to wait as construction companies have to slow down because they lack the workers.
I'm also reading about a lot of families that are going, and in their place, many suspect that some single men will be coming in to replace them with no ties or connections to the community. What does that do to potentially to a community, to your mind?
Well, it's starting over again. It's going to be a new community. As I mentioned, you know, the community's been here 10 years. The kids are born in the U.S. You're building roots into the community. Those are the folks that are leaving. They don't want their kids to be harassed. They're not willing to take the risk of staying here. The folks that are going to come, a new wave of immigrants, single men who can completely stay under the radar. They don't have to worry about getting kids in school. They're not going to have ties to the community. They're going to come in, do work, and leave, or hope, you know, eventually start families again. But it's sort of the new cycle of immigration. It's going to start over.
We'd now like to bring in two more voices to the conversation. Joey Kennedy joins me from Birmingham, Alabama. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Birmingham News, a big critic of the Alabama immigration law. He's been speaking out against it in his columns. Joey Kennedy, thanks for being with us.
Jane, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Also with me from Birmingham is Cameron Smith. He's general counsel for the Alabama Policy Institute, a conservative Alabama think tank. He's author of a recent article put out by the Institute defending the Alabama immigration law against some of the criticisms leveled against it. Cameron Smith, welcome to you.
Glad to be here, Jane.
I'll come to both of you here at the top here and just ask how each of you sees this law. Joey Kennedy, you first.
Well, as the professor from Tuscaloosa said, it has created a lot of fear and confusion. And the law is such an overreach for the supposed problem we have in Alabama, probably not more than 100,000 undocumented immigrants anyway in the state of about 4.4 million people. So we have a law that forces inconvenience on legal residents, on long lines at TAG, to get your car tags. We have clearly profiling occurring in the schools and in the community. And so what the law accomplishes, if it accomplishes anything, is it harkens back to, I'm sorry, this is Alabama, and we have that history, and it looks like more of that history.
How do you respond to that, Cameron Smith? This law clearly Joey's referring to as sort of mean-spirited or even racist in comparison to Jim Crow laws. Is that fair?
Well, I think what you have to first look at is why do we have the problem in the first place? We have the problem in the first place because the federal government has not enforced immigration law for quite some time. If you look at the Arizona law, the Alabama law, many other similarly drafted laws, what you see are provisions that echo federal law. And this is one of those situations where the federal government has failed to act and Alabama has done its best to kind of take up that mantle.
What about that, Joey?
I find that slightly ironic when you're talking about Alabama, which has had to be told by the federal government on so many issues to do what it should do anyway and to trust, you know, its better angels, which we have a history of not seeming to do. And any time that we, as a state, have an opportunity to do that, it seems that we let the federal government instead come in and tell us what to do. Well, here's a case where we want to tell the federal government, you know, what it should be doing for a problem that is really fairly minor for our state. Not for the country, I understand, but for our state.
Help us understand the political environment, Cameron Smith, in Alabama that led to this law.
Well, I think that what you're seeing is you've got high unemployment in the state. When you're looking around 10%, that creates a situation where people are perceiving we have, or at least should have, demand for jobs. They've seen situations where there's been lax immigration enforcement, and at the very least, there's a perception that public benefits and other things are going to people who are not in the country through permissible channels.
To your mind, is this law written in a way, Cameron, that will prevent racial profiling? Joey made reference to that, profiling in schools and throughout the community. Do you see that
you know, pulling someone over on the street or taking a child out of class simply because they look Hispanic. Is the law written in a way that will prevent that, do you think?
Well, I think that this is a point, and Joey may disagree, but I think that the issue here is clarity and guidance in the way that the law is enforced. Judge Blackburn, in her opinion, when discussing the preliminary injunction, said that particularly with the request for identification by law enforcement officers, that there are potentially constitutional ways to enforce that provision and potentially unconstitutional ways to do that. And I think what we need right now is some clarification, probably from the Attorney General, on the best way to enforce the law in a racially neutral fashion. There are provisions throughout the text that say this section will not be enforced with respect to race, national origin, ethnicity. And I think that we're in a situation now where we do see anecdotal stories of improper enforcement. But I don't think that we need to just have racially neutral enforcement in the immigration law. We need it in all of our laws. So I don't think that the issue is one that's unresolvable, but I think there is a need for clarity.
Joey Kennedy, do you see that clarity coming?
Well, I don't know about the clarity, but I agree with Cameron that this law was passed without any funding for proper training of police and enforcement officials, without any guidance on what schools should do, without it was just passed as this huge sledgehammer to hit this very tiny problem, and there isn't very much guidance out there. And so it's being enforced right now because the judge said we can't enforce it, but the Attorney General still hasn't come out with that clarity. The governor's office hasn't come out with that clarity. The law enforcement public official, State Department of Public Safety hasn't come with that clarity. And so what we have is a bit of chaos right now. And the myth that people are waiting in line, Alabamians who are unemployed are waiting in lines for these jobs, is just that, according to Jay Reed, who is the executive director of the Associated Builders and Contractors in Alabama. And let me tell you, that's no liberal group out there who's, you know, what he's saying is that there aren't countless Alabamians waiting in line to be hired at their job sites. He says that's just a myth.
Let me play some sound from State Senator Scott Beeson. He's a Republican in the Alabama State House. He wrote the immigration law, and he was meeting with farmers last week. We heard from one of those farmers at the top of this hour, Kathy Smith. State Senator Beeson acknowledged that this law would affect harvests and would have an economic impact, but he said it was necessary.
I don't think you can write it to say agriculture is exempted or anything like that. It either has to be you're going to decide what you're going to do with the illegal aliens that are in the state. Are you going to make it easy for them to stay here or not easy for them to stay here? And my position is to stay with the law that we have.
And here are opponents of the new Alabama immigration law rallying outside State Senator Beeson's church in Garendale last week, fearing the deportation of her undocumented parents. Here's teenager Yasina Janes, a U.S. citizen, wondering how Senator Beeson would feel in her shoes.
I just want to ask him how would he feel if he was an immigrant and have families. If his family was separated, how would he feel? And I just want him to stop the law.
Talk about the human impact of this, but first, what are the economics of this law, Joey Kennedy, as you see them from farming and beyond?
Well, the predictions are that it's going to be bad economically for the state, that we're going to lose a class of workers that probably won't be replaced to a great extent, and there will be, as Senator Beeson said, some shakedown in the way that's adjusted. What those of us who oppose the law hope for is that there will be reasonable heads on the higher courts that will stop enforcement of the law, and we can go forward from there. What we wish didn't happen was that we had the expense that we're going to have to defend this law in a state that is poor and has many other problems that it should be focusing on with those resources other than a small community of undocumented immigrants who generally are part of their communities.
Cameron Smith, how do you view the economic concerns here, especially among the farmers and the construction companies that are being hard hit?
Well, I absolutely think that they can't be minimized. You have to look at fundamentally, when you have a reliable labor force that you've been depending on for quite some time, and then basically in very short order it's gone. There are real economic impacts. The Alabama Policy Institute, we have friends in the construction industry, landscaping industry, agriculture. You can go down the list, and we've heard from many of them that said, wow, I had a dependable labor force that could pass drug tests, that I knew was going to be there, and they were going to work hard. We want to comply with the law, but, you know, we also need to keep our doors open. We need to keep our businesses going. And I think that that's a legitimate concern. One of the solutions that the Alabama Policy Institute has looked at is you have a labor need. You have a demand that's there. One of the problems with, for example, the H-2A program that would allow agricultural workers to come in is that they're tied to employers. Why not, you know, this would once again be a federal solution, but why not create a situation where you could tie them, for example, to a temp agency so that workers could come in, that they could work for the temp agency, and as seasonal labor is needed, that they could work for a number of different employers meeting their labor demands, as opposed to a situation where they're tied to one employer, and then when they work for that employer and that work's completed, they have to return to their country of origin.
My call board is lit up here. I want to get some of our listeners into the conversation. Let's go first to Julia, who's in Boston. Julia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Very important show. I'm a pediatrician in Boston, and through my professional work and also my volunteer work, I've come to know a number of undocumented families, and actually the majority of whom are mixed-status families, as was alluded to earlier in your show, meaning some family members are United States citizens, often it's the kids, and others are undocumented. I have come to know the vast majority as extremely hardworking, honest, decent, and family-oriented people whose highest priority really is to support their families in the best possible way. But the thing that I find so disturbing is that so many children are living under this permanent leaden weight of fear that they're going to lose their parents, that the family will be separated.
That their parents will actually be deported. I hear you, Julie. Thank you very much for the call. Here's Maria in Nashville, Tennessee. Maria, welcome to you. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Actually, this conversation really made me angry to hear that the laws that they were trying to pass or are passing in Alabama are very irritating. They make me angry. Because they're so, they remind me of the Nazis in Germany. They remind me of the laws that they passed that were Jim Crow laws. They remind me of what they did to the people in South Africa, what they did to Steve Biko. There was a movie just recently that reminded me so much of things that, what happened.
Harkens sure, back to a difficult time in your mind, Maria. Thank you. Here's one more from Lance in Clarksville, Tennessee. Hi, Lance. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. How you doing?
Fine. Thanks. Go ahead.
I am so for this law. I mean, as far as it goes with the sadness that everybody has for these people that are coming into the to the country illegally. First of all, it's dropping everything. I own a construction company. I've worked for construction companies my entire life. I have a master's degree in architecture. I've worked in the field where you find most illegal people for some reason, my major thing is these people are working for pennies on the dollars. And then the contractors and all these people, all the other people that are complaining, the farmers and everything like that, they knew these people were illegal and they're still letting them work for them. And they're complaining because they're going to have to spend more money to keep actual workers from the United States employed by them. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Lance, let me put your comments to our guest today. I'm really glad that you called. Joey and Cameron, how do you see that? Joey, you first.
Well, I already quoted the executive director of the Associated Builders and Contractors, who says that those workers just aren't out there waiting to take those jobs. And so I understand that there has been no doubt some impact in the job market because of it. But the extent, what we're talking about is how big is the problem. And the problem as far as undocumented immigrants is concerned in Alabama, is not a big problem and certainly not one that requires a law this far-reaching where government is in every aspect of not only the illegal immigrants' lives but the legal U.S. citizens' lives as well.
Cameron, what's your response to that, that the workers just aren't out there? These are low-paying jobs, they're hard, and most Americans just don't want those kind of jobs.
Well, I think that ultimately at the end of the day, that's one of the things that we're probably going to find out in short order in Alabama, whether that obtains or doesn't obtain. I think one of the concerns and one of the things that Lance brought up, which I think is worth noting, is you want to be really careful that in opposing immigration enforcement, you don't create an underclass of citizens that don't enjoy the protections that normal workers enjoy. For example, you have minimum wage laws in the United States. If those workers are undocumented, are off the paper trail, if you will, in a cash economy, and they are, in fact, working for, let's say, $4 an hour, well, that's an abuse of that immigrant population that shouldn't be tolerated either, and that largely can stem from an unenforcement paradigm.
Mike Inez Jimenez, I know that you study this. I'm curious what you think other Alabama industries will be affected by this law.
Aside from construction and farming, the service industry in general, I mean, you have food service, you have a lot of restaurants, you have – I mean, it's just in general. I want to go back just for a second what Cameron said about the effect in the creation of an underclass, if you don't mind.
Okay.
We need to keep in mind, especially in construction, a lot of the folks that are leaving are here legally. They're residents. They have permission. They happen to be Latino. And, again, some of them might be in mixed-status families. Some of them are not. But they don't want to hang around. This law creates the underclass, a Latino working class underclass. Everybody, this big draw of people leaving is not just undocumented people leaving. And we're seeing a lot of people just not wanting to deal with it. They've created a new Latino underclass in the state.
Mike Inez Jimenez, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Mike Inez Jimenez is Assistant Professor of American Studies at the University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa, where he studies immigration and labor. Here are a couple of comments from our website. Here's from JL, who writes, the state of Alabama is cracking down against illegal immigration, which is a crime, not legal immigration. There is a big difference. Here's Maverick, who writes, the legal method of immigration is available to all. Go make use of the legal method, he writes. Here are some University of Alabama students marching through the streets of Birmingham in protest of Alabama's new immigration law, HB 56.
This is what democracy looks like! For abuse! For abuse!
Student
power!
Student
power!
Immigrant
power!
Immigrant
power!
We're joined this hour by Joey Kennedy of the Birmingham News and by Cameron Smith of the Alabama Policy Institute. A few more comments from our website. Hidan writes, if one were to deport all illegals, expect a large jump in milk and all prices related to any food goods. If all those illegals were deported and all Americans took their jobs, not changing the standard of work or pay, those 14 million Americans would still not be able to make it economically. And Marcus writes, if you don't enforce our laws and if you encourage more illegals to come here through tuition breaks, under-the-table jobs, health care, housing, the 14 million that are here today will be dwarfed by tens of millions more. Give them amnesty like Reagan did, and you've just sent a message to the billions of poor in the world to come here, work, have children who will be taken care of, and eventually you'll be a citizen. Let's go back to the phones, get more perspectives from Chris. He's calling from North Liberty, Iowa. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. My comment was just what you were talking about there. We've got a choice that we need to make here in this country. If we're going to have immigration laws on the books that simply can't be enforced, I think we need to let states do this as a matter of these farmers, if they're only paying these workers less than minimum wages, that's not right. We need to have people that are making livable wages out there. And if these farmers say that they can't grow a crop and make a profit, well, I say let those farmers pay pay people what they need to live on here in this country, above minimum wage, hopefully, and raise their prices. And then that leads to the choice that we're going to have to make as a public. You know, are we going to pay more for milk prices? Are we going to pay more for our spinach and our apples? And I say we should pay more for those things because it means that the employers are doing the right things, the legal things, and employing people in this country at a wage that makes it worth for them being here, and then utilizing our services. So we have a choice, that an overarching choice that we need to be making here. I'm in favor of paying more for our produce and for our products if it means that we have people that are here legally being paid a good wage and their life is improved. And right now their lives are being, as a caller said earlier, you know, they're being run over, they're being swept under the rug, and they're not being taken care of. You know, their situation may be better than where it was from where they came from, but they're not being taken care of. And the reason we may not have lines of people standing up to take construction jobs is because, you know, those construction jobs might be paying $7 or $8 an hour when, you know, if you're paying a person $12, $14, $15 an hour, you would probably have people in line to do that. And these companies need to be able to pay those wages and in turn be charging what they should be for a good product here.
Chris, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. Cameron Smith, Joey Kennedy respond to that. These tough choices that Chris says we have to make as American people. Cameron, you first.
Well, I think he's absolutely right. Fundamentally, this issue comes down to some very difficult dynamics that can't be ignored. I mean, if a family, for example, has been here with one or both parents here as an unauthorized immigrant, they've still been here. They've been part of a community for 10 years. To now enforce the law does create a very difficult dynamic to deal with. The same can be said for businesses who have relied on illegal labor. They've operated under that business model for quite some time, and when enforcement comes in many respects overnight, then that can be a real challenging dynamic. That said, you know, the tough choice is, do you want your laws to matter? Do you want if you have a law in the books, and you know, you can look at Title 8 of the United States Code for our immigration law on the federal level. If it's there and it's not enforced, do we really want laws that, you know, don't have meaning? And these are difficult choices. We do have to make them. And I think as a people in Alabama and as a nation, that's not something that we should turn a blind eye to any longer, because there are families that hang in the balances. There are in the balance. There are businesses that hang in the balance. And I think it's incumbent on our representatives at the federal level and at the state level to address these issues thoughtfully.
Joey Kennedy.
I think another myth that we talk about is that many of the undocumented workers are paid these horribly paltry wages, and that's just not the case. And many, many of them, there are some, but many of them are paid over the table. They pay taxes, they pay Social Security, they pay toward benefits that they will never receive because they won't get Social Security or Medicare. And another thing that I wanted to address concerned one of the bill's sponsors, Senator Scott Beeson, who earlier said that you couldn't make exceptions for, you know, the farmers or for construction industry. And I appreciate him saying that. But, you know, the law does make exceptions for people who hire maids and yard people. They don't have to check the immigration status through E-Verify for those kind of workers. So it does make exceptions for a certain class, but it doesn't make exceptions over the complete width of the bill.
Here's Sean from New Haven, Connecticut. Hi, Sean. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I agree with Joey Kennedy and the idea that migrant workers are not paid much lower wages than what an employer would likely pay somebody that, you know, would fit the description of not looking like a migrant worker. And I understand that while many people need jobs in the United States, the problem is if somebody's not in the industry and they're looking for a job and they happen to say, I'm going to try working in a kitchen or try landscaping or try something in the service industry, maybe pushing a rake in construction, if they haven't done that before, they're less likely to want to keep that job when something what they perceive as better comes along in the future. And I think that, you know, for employees, reliability is a big thing. You know, some people will say that the only reason that the migrant workers are reliable is because they don't have another option. But I think as long as that you're paying, as long as they're receiving wages on the books and you're treating them fairly, I think that, you know, I kind of don't see the difference. I guess I don't see the problem in it.
Sean, thanks very much. Carl here is from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Carl. Welcome to On Point. What's your perspective?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering why nobody's compared the new Alabama law to the new California law, which is the opposite.
Which is Jerry Brown, the governor of
Jerry
California,
Brown.
Extending what, in-state tuition to all illegal immigrants, correct?
Yeah, I believe that's what it is, yes.
Joey Kennedy and Cameron Smith, that is an interesting comparison, is it not, at this time?
I think people are – this is Joey Kennedy. I think that people are comparing all of the immigration laws and looking across at what they are. But certainly people who are in the country have a right to an education. I think actually whatever their status is, and I think the Supreme Court has been very clear on that.
Cameron?
I think that actually one of the things that prompted me to write the column that I did was when the New York Times came out and said how inhospitable Alabama was. And I knew that we were in trouble the moment that someone from New York was telling us how inhospitable we were. That said, I think that what you're seeing is the beginning of a long overdue conversation about the way we treat our immigration laws and the people who are affected by them. California, New York, you can look, Illinois, you can look around the country at very different immigration paradigms than you're going to see in Alabama or Arizona. And I think this is one issue where, President Obama has said, look, if we have immigration laws that are radically different across the country, we've got a problem. And I think what this begs is for Congress to step in and say, wait a minute. We need a common sense immigration platform. We've needed overhauls that are long overdue. If we're concerned about the economy and job creation, let's have an immigration system that's largely based on economic factors. Like if we need highly skilled workers in the construction industry and that demand can't be met in the state of Alabama or in the surrounding states, then, hey, let's look at that as a priority for people coming in. If we need computer programmers, whatever the demand is that we can't meet, we should look to that sort of paradigm as the way forward on some of our immigration reforms.
Joey Kennedy, do you see other states following in Alabama's and Arizona's footsteps?
I do. I think there are already other states that are talking about and going to introduce these kinds of laws. And I think, ultimately we all know whatever our judge does here, whatever the 11th Circuit does with our law and with the other laws that are going through the process, it's going to end up at the Supreme Court level. And that's where a definitive ruling is going to come out about this. But I do want to say that Cameron is absolutely right. We have to address this in a kind of sensible, comprehensive way that doesn't have 50 different laws addressing, the same problem across the board. We need to approach it that way. But I don't believe that that there is any sort of commitment or desire to do that in Washington. It's the political climate is just poison right now.
Here's more comments, another comment from our website, onpointradio.org. Jamie says, immigration is an incredibly difficult issue to debate, but considering my father was born in a refugee camp in Germany without running water and yet with a lot of hard work grew up to go to Harvard and sent all of his kids to college, I find it really hard to have too much sympathy for illegal immigrants. This law, however, is too confusing and far too much fear-mongering is going on to actually fix anything. And here's Jennifer, who says, as an Alabamian and a Christian, this law makes me sick. My father is a builder, and he's already seen the backlash from this. Here's another call from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Bobby. Welcome to On Point. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking me. Yeah, I've got a couple of comments. My wife, and I'd like to have an answer from somebody because I can't get one from a politician or any immigration lawyers. My wife is German, born and raised in Germany, Berlin. if she didn't have her papers and green card, you know, there is no questions asked. She would be deported. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. I'd like to know, what is the difference between a German and a Mexican? I'm a true American. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about my citizenship. And I'm in the music business. When I travel outside the country, if I didn't have my papers, I couldn't even get back in the country. The first word in illegal immigrant is illegal. Why don't they just enforce the law that's there? America is all about helping everyone, and I'm about that too. But come here legally. And these folks that are on welfare, that most of them, you know and I know, they don't want to work. Put them people to work. They're just living off welfare. Put them people in them jobs.
All right, Bobby, let me take your comments to Joey Kennedy. Joey, your response.
I sounds like someone who posts on our blogs, actually, tell you the truth, because we get a lot of that same similar comment. You know, what is it about illegal that people don't understand? Why don't they just come here legally? But quite frankly, it's very difficult for somebody to immigrate to the United States legally, especially if you don't have certain skill sets. And the kind of jobs that many of the undocumented workers are filling are not the kinds of skill sets that are going to get them permission to move into this country legally.
And you, Cameron Smith?
Well, I think Bobby makes an interesting point. I think it was in 2005, the Pew Hispanic Center put out some information on the makeup of the undocumented population. And admittedly, I mean, that's a very difficult thing to do. But they suggested that about 80%, 81% of people here illegally were from Latino countries, which leaves about 20% that are from any number of different countries. And I think what you see is a real concern with people that, hey, this is a volitional issue. People chose to come into this country by unauthorized means, and they shouldn't be given an advantage because they've done that. I agree with Joey. The system's broken. It is expensive. It is onerous. I mean, you can go down the list, but it also remains the law. And I think that's where there's a real challenge, because at the same time that there are these challenges presented and burdens placed upon people who want to come to this country to pursue the American dream, we also have a rule of law. And that's what's enabled our country to have success. You can look over in Afghanistan right now. There's any number of countries around the world that can make laws. But what's different in the United States is, by and large, those laws are reliably and indiscriminately enforced, such that we know they're relatively predictable outcomes in our legal system.
And Jane, I would just want to add that Bobby's wife certainly probably wouldn't have any problem in Alabama, because it's not the Germans and the illegal Swedes and the illegal Canadians who are going to be stopped and harassed by this law. It's the brown people, and it's very clear, no matter what the law says, that's exactly what's been happening and what will happen if the law remains.
Joey Kennedy, the U.S. Justice Department and other groups that oppose this law have sought to block its enforcement during the appeals process. What is the next step in the courts?
It's been appealed to the 11th Circuit in Atlanta. I'm sure a panel will hear it, and I believe the state of Alabama has until tomorrow to get its argument in. And so we'll see what the 11th Circuit does.
And Cameron, what do you foresee? Do you think this law is going to hold?
Well, what I see happening right now is what's ultimately a trajectory towards a circuit split. Right now we're dealing with the preliminary injunctions, basically, can this law take effect or not? These are not necessarily our arguments on the merits of the case. However, what they do is they sort of telegraph the way different judges are going to handle the matter. And what I anticipate seeing is a split specifically right now between the Ninth Circuit and what I suspect is ultimately going to be a differing opinion over very similar provisions of law in the 11th Circuit. And I think that will ultimately, I don't know when, but will ultimately force the issue before the Supreme Court.
To be continued, Cameron Smith joining us from Birmingham, Alabama, general counsel for the Alabama Policy Institute, a conservative think tank based in Birmingham, and author of the recent article, The Politics of the Immigration Shame Game. Cameron Smith, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Joey Kennedy, blogger and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Birmingham News. He's been speaking out against Alabama's new immigration law in his columns. Joey Kennedy, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, on our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.